Welcome to Reflections in the Dark here on Firefall Talk Radio. I'm Richard Grund, flying solo tonight, so buckle your seatbelts. As soon as we get to our cruising altitude, you can unbuckle and move about the cabin. A lot of craziness in the world. Quick little announcement. First of all, welcome. Thank you. Normally, every year about this time, since we've been on the air, we do something called Occultoberfest, and our goal this year is on Sunday, October 25th, to do a two-hour show and just cover it all that night as opposed to stretching it out over a month. Too much going on, and the reason I say it's our goal is I've come to the realization that you never know week to week what's going to happen. So we just ride it out. Like tonight, I'm here. Joe couldn't be. So we do the best we can with what we have. I just want to get everybody excited. Marty, Doc, and Jennifer will be arriving from the future in 10 days on October 21st, 2015 at 4:29. The DeLorean will pop through and they'll be back. So, sorry, I saw that meme and I couldn't resist that. You know, they went into the future and they arrived at October 21st, 2015. And here we are. So conspiracy theorists unite. Who knows what will happen on 10/21 at 4:29. I'll be surprised if something isn't manipulated to line up with it, because we're talking about conspiracy theories tonight. But seriously, before we go there, a lot of craziness going on in the Middle East. I don't know about you. Here's how I start my day. First, I wake up. That's the best way to start your day, is by waking up. Praise, take the dogs out, usually early, dark. Praise the Lord, praise the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Of course, I pray and I do all those things. And then I check on what's going on in the world so I know how to pray, what notes I need to say for either Wednesday night on the porch or Sunday nights for Reflections in the Dark. And I got to tell you, the notebooks and the saved emails, a lot of it's about the Middle East. And if you're not paying attention, if you think, oh, Shemitah year came and went, all the prophecies went unfulfilled, nothing happened, you are going to be very surprised, because it's happening as we speak. As you know, Russia come to Series 8 finally, lurking in the background. The bear finally came out of its cave and brought in all the heavy artillery and 150,000 ground soldiers, and they are pounding ISIS. I would not be surprised if the nuclear bomb that ISIS was going to use on us, they use there, and Damascus becomes a ruinous heap by their own hand. The other day, Russian jets were pounding ISIS and a jet straight into Turkey airspace, and Turkey shot it down. And Putin probably not going to take too kindly to that. And now the British Air Force has been given the green light to shoot down hostile Russian jets in Syria. So World War III is percolating. But here's my question. Not so much to Turkey, but to the British Air Force in the United Kingdom. Where were you when it came to stopping ISIS? You're going to stop Russia from bolstering up Assad and doing what he's doing. And I get it. I get the political ramifications of that. But he's the only one looking to put ISIS as a footnote in history. Where were you when Christians were being slaughtered? Where were you when all this began? And America, well, we already know that one. People are now starting to admit what's been accused of us at the UN, that we funneled the weapons to the rebels. And we helped create this mess. But since I'm on a serious note, let me ask this question. And, of course, we're not where I could see you, so you can't do a show of hands. But did anyone ever think we would get to a place where the Russian president is standing up for Christians and attacking our enemies, and the U.S. president is bashing Christians every chance he gets and standing up for our enemies? What bizarre world did we enter? Or did, in the blink of an eye, prophecy shift the timeline and shift our reality? And here's what I think as we head into the topic for tonight. We started 2 years ago with Wake Up. Then we went to Finally Awake. And then this year we decided, well, you should be awake by now, if that could be called a theme, awake by now. But here's what I think as I talk to people, and I'm not saying it to you, the listener, because if you're listening, you're probably not one of those people. But I look at the post on Facebook, and I look what people are interested in social media, especially even those of the fringe element. And I think we went from wake up to finally awake to napping. Oh, I'm awake, and I'm a little tired of waiting for all this. I'm going to take a nap. And that's when it's going to happen, while we're napping. For the most part, I think the fringe element has become even more fringe. People have milked the whole Nephilim thing to death, and so now they're going to scatter around to find something else to talk about, to fill the conference hall, to get you to buy the DVDs and the online streaming. The amount of plagiarism is crazy. You know, I've griped about this for years. But apparently, I saw an email where somebody stole the mailing list for Prophecy in the News after J.R. Church passed away. So now they're trying to track down and verify not only who did it, who got it. Come on, folks. This thing has gotten so weird, and the problem is that it's a distraction. So I looked this up. The definition of awake is to stop sleeping. Gee, that's somebody spent a lot of time thinking that up. It's to stop sleeping, to awaken, to stir, to come around. An adjective, that was the verb. The adjective is to not asleep, you know. And I don't know. I don't know. What do you think? If you had to give an honest assessment for where you are in the grand scheme of things, are you awake? Do you think you're awake? Or is that the reason you listen here? Is to make sure that you don't miss something? And I don't know. Maybe I'm a little too, what's the word? Well, I'm focused because of what I do and who I am and what my calling is, and I get that. But I'm at the point of, I don't want to say overload, but I'm so on edge because of what I'm seeing. I'm so concerned for my family, for my home. Now when I go out in public because of these attacks on Christians in open places, in places you would not expect them to happen, especially areas that are considered gun-free zones, which I call kill zones, isn't it amazing that we protect wild animals from getting trapped into areas that are kill zones, but we don't do that for humans? So I'm more alert than I've ever been before, and I have a background in this. For 10 years, I was a bodyguard and a security specialist in New York City in the entertainment industry. And my family will tell you, if you go out to dinner with me, I get the seat that can see the door, and on and on. I am more on edge than I've ever been before, and I trust the Lord, don't get me wrong. And I listen to the Holy Spirit, and sometimes trusting the Lord and listening to the Holy Spirit is, get out of here, get out of here now. And we really have to be awake. We really have to come out of our slumber. The other thing I want to talk about is this whole concept of conspiracy and conspiracy theories. And as you know, if you've listened for the last 5+ years, we'll touch on them, we'll talk on them, but I'm pretty good about digging, vetting, and researching and blowing things up when they need to be blown up. But the word conspiracy means, A, the act of conspiring, or an evil, unlawful, treacherous plan to formulate in secret by two or more persons, i.e. a plot, or a combination of persons for a secret, unlawful, or evil purpose. And we know that there are those things out there. Conspiracies are the powers that be. I use that term because I don't know who they are. I can say, well, it's the ruling families, and I can go down the 13 families, but I don't know that for sure. I could say, well, it's that black shadow. What is that? Where are they? Who are they? We say, when people say, well, who did it? They did it. Well, who are they? It's them. Well, who's them? And, well, I think it could be, now we're guessing, because we really don't know. They don't sit down and say, oh, by the way, I'm one of them. But on and on and on, we read all these things, we look at all these things, but then guess what? We realize that conspiracy theories become conspiracy fact. And it's all about control. And this is not a conspiracy theory, but it's going to lead us into it. If you are on Facebook, you may have found the Supernatural Response Facebook page. If you haven't, go there. And if you don't know where that is, go to supernaturalresponse.net and click the Facebook icon on the page. There's something called the TPP, and that's not toilet paper. TPP is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And it's something that's been negotiated behind closed doors by officials from the United States and 11 other countries. And when you look at these 11 countries, you sit back and you go, why are we behind closed doors with these countries? Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Japan, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. If ever an odd group of people, that's it. But it's a massive free trade agreement that is so secretive. The only people that know anything about it are the people that are in the meeting rooms and the corporate 600 official corporate trade sponsors. Ah, here we go. This Trans-Pacific Partnership is a covert conspiratorial partnership in that the public can't see the draft of the text. Members of Congress have been denied for years and are only provided limited access, meaning they only get to read what the group of nations want them to read. The 600 official corporations, well, they know what's in there because they've helped negotiate it. And although it's a free trade agreement, it's not really about trade. It's in there. There are 29 draft chapters, and only five deal with traditional trade issues. That's right. Five of the 29 deal with trade, but yet it's called the trade partnership. Well, is that really what we're talking about? And most of the rules are about non-trade matters that affect your life and mine, food safety, internet freedom, medicine costs, financial regulation, and more. Food safety, we're going to talk about that. Internet freedom, yep. Medicine costs, if you don't have insurance, you can forget about medicine. And Big Pharma is what rules this whole thing. And one of the companies involved in all of this is also involved in Big Pharma. What a shock. I'm so surprised. Domestic policies would be put into place forcibly if necessary to comply with the TPP rules. Remember a couple of years ago, we talked about something called SOPA, S-O-P-A, the Stop Online Piracy Act, which was supposed to be put in place to stop all of the illegal downloading and all those things. And any of those people that ran the companies that did that were put in jail. And I don't have a problem with that. As a member of Screen Actors Guild, I still get residuals to some of the projects I did for 10 years in New York. And while they have become minuscule because of the years from when it originally happened, I still get them, and every now and then they're a blessing. Well, when somebody pirates a picture or a TV show or something I was in, I don't get any residuals from that sale. So I understand the fact that there are people like me, not just the mega millionaires, but there are a lot of little people that need that. So I get online piracy, but that's really not what it was about. The online piracy SOPA was about control and taking over the internet and copyright infringement, online trafficking, and other things. But basically what it would have done is put the internet completely under government control. Well, those same corporations that were behind that are behind this. And guess what? The organizations that stopped SOPA, Electronic Freedom Foundation, and the ACLU are not going to be able to stop this. It was signed. And unless our congressmen shut it down, it's going through. And here's what would happen. Here's why it's important. If TPP goes through and somebody listens to a show we do, and even if the accusation is false and said these guys have violated copyright material. They have infringed on copyright material. They're, unlike YouTube, where they give you the ability to answer the accusation and present documentation, you're gone. You're off the air. You've been barred, and your internet provider is to make sure that you don't get back on the air. So let's say somebody other like than us, I doubt that we're on anybody's radar, but let's say Alex Jones or any of those people, and I just use him as an example because he's so huge, Glenn Beck, any of these guys that have spent years exposing the conspiracy theories into conspiracy fact, all they have to do is make one violation and they're gone. And they'll never be back on the air again. So what do you think it's about? It's about controlling the internet and controlling the flow of information. I think it was last week, the week before, I mentioned the only way they're going to pull off what they need to do is to be able to shut down the internet, shut down social media. They can't pull a scam when they say, oh, my goodness, there was a bombing at such and such. And then somebody tweets a picture and says, I'm standing right here. There is no bombing. They're never going to pull off false flags the way they need to, as long as social media can expose it. That's what this is about. And I would like to say I think our Congress is going to stand up to it, but when you've got 600 official corporations behind it, flooding money into campaigns for the people that would vote it down, I'm not expecting it would happen. So conspiracy theories do become conspiracy fact. Here's one. Professional wrestling is fake. No, yes, it was 30 years ago, my parents, of all people, would watch professional wrestling when it was in its heyday in the 80s. And I would sit there before leaving the room and going, you realize this is fake, right? No, it's not. You realize that these guys really don't hate each other and they're really not hitting each other. This is roller derby in a ring. Roller derby's not fake. And by that point, I would just leave the room. Well, the conspiracy theory of it being fake is true, and everybody knows it now, and they get it. It's entertainment. Here's another conspiracy theory that was poo-pooed and put down. The global elite want to dramatically reduce the global population. I remember watching a video. You remember what those are, those little square things with the tape inside, and you slid it into a machine, and every now and then the machine ate it, and you had to go buy another one because it didn't like you. But videotapes. I had one. I think I still do. And it was about global population, the people who were going to reduce it, how they were going to reduce it, some of the diseases that were out there. And that's what the man presented, that this global elite, and he started naming them by name and had documents with Henry Kissinger's name and some of these other people that show up at the Bohemian Grove. They show up at the Bilderbergers and all these major meetings. And I remember telling people about it, and they would look at me and go, oh, no, you're not one of those conspiracy theorist guys. You actually believe that? Well, here we are, 2015, and the facts are in. But the global elite, who are they? The powers that be, them. You know, we talked about them. David Rockefeller, quote, the negative impact of population growth on all of our planetary ecosystems is becoming appallingly evident. If you notice, David Rockefeller's name comes up a lot in the situation. CNN founder Ted Turner, quote, a total world population of 250 to 300 million people, a 95% decline from present levels would be ideal. Paul Ehrlich, former science advisor to President George W. Bush and the author of The Population Bomb, quote, to our minds, the fundamental cure, reducing the scale of human enterprise, including the size of population, to keep its aggregate consumption within the carrying capacity of the earth is obvious, but too much neglected or denied. A lot of fancy words in there that Paul Ehrlich thinks we need to kill a bunch of people. Barack Obama's primary science advisor, John P. Holdren, quote, a program of sterilizing women. I'm just astounded that I'm reading these words. A program of sterilizing women after their second or third child, despite the relatively greater difficulty of the operation than after the second or third, despite the it would might be easier to implement by trying to sterilize men. What planet or alternate reality or interdimensional portal did you step through, Mr. Holdren? Meaning, we got to get him at puberty. He goes on to say, and this is a continuation of that quote, I'm astounded. It's the first time I've read it out loud. I'm hearing myself say it. The development of a long-term sterilizing capsule that could be implanted under the skin and removed when pregnancy is desired opens up additional possibilities for coercive fertility control. The capsule could be implanted at What? And removable with official permission for a limited number of births. And why are you here for your appointment? Well, I'm here to have this thing taken out so I can make some babies. Okay, HBO personality Bill Maher. I'm pro-choice. I'm for assisted suicide. I'm for regular suicide. I'm for whatever gets the freeway moving. That's what I'm for. It's too crowded. The planet's too crowded, and we need to promote death. Well, Mr. Maher, I suggest you go first. March 29th, UN Population Division, in their policy brief, said, what would it take to accelerate fertility decline in the least developed countries? Microsoft Bill Gates. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's heading up to 9 billion. Pretty good at math there, Bill. It's really good. No wonder your Windows computers crash so much. 6.8 to 9 million. Yeah, that's an increase. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by 10 or 15%. Now, wait a second, Bill. What does new vaccines have to do with lowering the population? Remember I asked that question. We're going to get to it. Jacques Cousteau, in order to stabilize world population, we must eliminate 350,000 people per day. Unlike Bill Maher, he went first. He's gone. David Foreman, Earth First co-founder, meaning the Earth comes first. Now, we thank God comes first, but anyway, my three main goals would be to reduce human population for about 100 million worldwide, destroying the industrial infrastructure and sea wilderness with its full complements of species returning throughout the world. Folks, these are real quotes. Prince Philip, the Duke of Edinburgh, if I were reincarnated, I would wish to be returned to Earth as the killer virus to lower human population level. That's all right, Prince, you're royalty, so you're doing the same thing. Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger, who I've done a lot of research on and we've talked about her here, said, the most merciful thing that a family does to one of its infant members is to kill it. In her book, Women, Morality, and Birth Control, printed in 1922, she said on page 12, that birth control must lead ultimately to a cleaner race. Wow, Mikhail Gorbachev, we must speak more clearly about sexuality, contraception, about abortion, about values that control population. Did we catch that? Contraception and abortion control population, because the ecological crisis, in short, is the population crisis. Cut the population by 90%, and there aren't enough people left to do a great deal of ecological damage. And here we go. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton at the time said, this year, the United States renewed funding of reproductive health care through the United Nations Populations Fund, and more funding is on the way. The U.S. Congress recently appropriated more than $648 million in foreign assistance to family planning and reproductive health programs worldwide. That's the largest allocation in more than a decade since we last had a Democratic president, I might add. Yes, Hillary, we know the Democrats like to kill babies, but here we are, $640 million from Congress for family planning and population control. And one of the new Ten Commandments that was printed on the Georgia Guidestones was to maintain humanity under $500 million. in perpetual balance with nature. Conspiracy theory becomes conspiracy fact. Less than a year after the United Nations, with that $648 million from our Congress, unveiled a sweeping population-controlled plot aimed at reducing the number of people in Kenya. And how did they do it? Like Bill Gates said, through a vaccine program which has been under fire by doctors and Catholic bishops for deliberately sterilizing millions of women. It's on the internet. Look it up. They released a statement calling out the United Nations and all of these people. And here's how they did it. The explosive revelations were released after medical researchers in the Catholic Church found a sterilization agent in the tetanus inoculation being forced upon the Kenyan women by two UN agencies in cooperation with the national government, which means the Kenyan government was in on it. Incredibly, it's not the first time that international vaccine programs by the UN targeting third world nations have been covert sterilization and eugenics programs. Some critics have referred to the latest plot as race-based genocide. Wow. This is the world we're living in, that if these Kenyan doctors and the Catholic bishops had not managed to get a hold of the tetanus vaccine used during the World Health Organization's and UNICEF's immunization campaign in March of 2014 and subjected them to testing, we would have never known. And by the way, it happened again recently. And here's what they did. They laced the vaccine with something called HCG. And what that does is makes women sterile. What world have we lived in that this conspiracy theory, which we've seen in TV and movies and the X-Files and all this other stuff, that you would sit there and think nobody could pull it off? Well, you can pull it off when you've got the UN and the United States and that much money behind you. A deputy counselor for the city of Helsinki publicly stated on his Facebook post that African men who come to Finland as refugees should not be allowed to have more than three children and should be sterilized instead. According to, I can't pronounce his name anyway, the problem with African immigrants, they have too many children, so let's sterilize them. I'm sorry, folks. This is just at a place where you wish it was a conspiracy theory and not conspiracy fact. Why would the powers that be, the global elite, all these people that show up at all these meetings, why would they want to do this? It's about control. If you can dumb down the masses by putting fluoride in the water, do your home before you jump on me about fluoride, do your own homework, and you will find out that the Nazi scientists invented fluoride to make the prisoners docile. It's now been found actually in some children to cause tooth decay and maybe the source of other illnesses. Well, how can they pull this off? Well, they can do it through the immunization. But here's another conspiracy theory, GMO, genetically modified foods. I remember when it first came out, not when it first came out, when I first heard about it, I think it was 2010 or 11, somewhere in there. Really didn't know much about it, hadn't paid any attention to it. And then while at a conference in Ohio, went by a cornfield that was in the middle of nowhere, and by the people that lived nearby, said it was owned by Monsanto, and the corn that was there was genetically modified. And I got to tell you what, this was the most frightening looking Frankenstein corn I'd ever seen. Now, when you do your homework about GMOs, if you haven't, you realize what you've been eating. But here's how it plays out. Monsanto was created, let me get my facts here, in 1901 by a man named John Francis Queeny. Initially, Monsanto produced food additives like saccharin. Yes, they're the ones who came up with that incredible poison called saccharin. Then they expanded into industrial chemicals like sulfuric acid and PCBs, in the 1920s. The 1940s, they were the major producers of plastics, polystyrene, and synthetic fibers. Yeah, we're batting 1,000 here for health benefits. Then they went on to notable achievements, chemical breakthroughs that produced things like DDT, insecticides like DDT, Agent Orange, and recombinant bovine somatropin, aka bovine growth hormone, that when used or put into foods creates early puberty and breast and prostate cancer. Right now, Monsanto owns 80% of the genetically modified crops, and the sale of Roundup, the stuff that kills weeds, made them the fifth largest agrochemical company in the world. And do your homework on Roundup and why nations have banned it, except for us. Nations have banned it because of the side effects. So in 2013, the U.S. military, Monsanto started targeting GMO activists and independent scientists. Gee, I wonder if that's why all those holistic doctors have died over the last couple of months. In 2008, Vanity Fair did an article called Monsanto's Harvest of Fear. From the article itself, it says, Monsanto relies on a shadowy army of private investigators and agents in the American heartland, fear into farm country. They go into fields and farm towns. They secretly videotape and photograph farmers, store owners, and co-ops. And then what they'll do is, if you're a threat to them, they'll falsely accuse you. According to this article, they use one story. They accused the man of stealing their GMO seeds, and they tried to destroy him. They have been described, according to the local farmers, as seed police, Gestapo, and mafia in their tactics. Basically, if you remember the first X-Files movie, if you're an X-Files fan, and what they were doing with the crops, of course, they were doing it for an alien conspiracy. I'm not saying they are or they're not. I'm just saying that conspiracy theory, like in that movie, becomes conspiracy fact. So, GMOs. You remember, I think it was last year, or the 2012, I think the election where everybody wanted GMOs labeled. You remember that? We wanted the FDA and the USDA to tell us when a food had GMO into it. And the President Obama said, hey, I'm in there with you. And he appointed key figures to as heads of the FDA and the USDA to ferret this out and to label the GMOs. And here's the list of who he appointed. Michael Taylor, former VP of Monsanto, is now the FDA Deputy Food Commissioner. Tom Vilsack, former pro biotechnology governor of Iowa, is now assigned as USDA secretary. Roger Beachy, the former director of Monsanto, is now a director of the USDA. Elena Kagan, the one who just was nominated to the Supreme Court with a legal background that would say she probably should have been more of a stenographer, took Monsanto's side against organic farmers in Roundup Ready alfalfa case. So she took the side of Monsanto in the case. On and on it goes. Former director of Pro Biotech Gates Foundation, Rajiv Shah, is now a USDA secretary. Linda Strahan, Monsanto's and DuPont's representative, is an assistant secretary for the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the EPA. You can't make this up. You just can't make this up. According to MotherJones.com, Monsanto's CEO, Hugh Grant, in a call with an analyst for J.P. Morgan Chase, he was asked whether Monsanto was still interested in boosting its pesticide portfolio by buying a competitor. And Grant's answer was essentially yes, we still believe in the opportunity of integrated solutions, which means selling more pesticides along with seeds. But here's what jumped out at me that I wanted to share with you. Right now, Monsanto owns 400 million acres of seed technology. Their footprint is 400 million acres. Translated, which means they have a patent on seeds and traits sown on 400 million acres worldwide, about four times the size of California. And their attitude is, if we could sell more pesticides to the people who farm those acres, we could make more money. I'm just astounded. I'm just astounded. And the only way to stop this, here's how the legal director for the Center for Food Safety, who's been tracking Monsanto's activities for years. Monsanto wants to patent these seeds. And the U.S. State Patent and Trademark Office refused a patent on seeds, which, with the logical answer that life forms cannot be patented. So what happened was, in 1980, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, stated that seeds were not life forms, they were widgets. And they laid the groundwork for them to be able to patent the seeds. You can't make this up. You can't make it up. Let me keep moving here. One of the conspiracy theories I remember from the 90s, and I used to tell people about it, and they would say, no, that's illegal. It could never happen. They wouldn't allow it to happen, was that the NSA is spying on all our phone calls, internet searches, and financial transactions. And I remember watching a movie called Enemy of the State. Will Smith was the star of it. Gene Hackman co-starred. And Gene Hackman played a character called Brill, who used to work for the NSA and is now kind of rogue. This is a combined quote from the movie. The government's been in bed with the entire telecommunications industry since the 40s. They've infected everything. They've gotten into your bank statements, computer files, emails. Listen to your phone calls. Every wire, every airwave, the more technology used, the easier it is for them to keep tabs on you. It's a brave new world out there. In the old days, we actually had to tap a wire into your phone lines. Now, with calls bouncing off of satellites, they snatch them right out of the air. That was 1998, and the script was probably written, shooting took place in 97. So the script and the storyline was written 95, 96. Really? 20 years ago? That's how far back? And of course, thank you to Mr. Snowden, Edward Snowden, and I'm not a fan, I'm just saying, had he not released all that information, we wouldn't have known that conspiracy theory was conspiracy fact. Like right now, I don't know who's listening. I don't know if I've said anything that has triggered a recorder somewhere. When you go on Skype, if you use it, FaceTime, anything that goes over an airway or an internet line, and you use certain keywords, I'm not going to use them now because then that would trigger the thing and would be counterproductive to what I'm trying to tell you. But if you use certain keywords, it will get recorded. And then they'll determine whether you are a real threat. And then you may get a knock on your door. Your door may be obliterated and a group of people may come rushing in. If you use Facebook Messenger, please understand every message that you write is going through a screening process and they're being saved. And if any of them seem alarming, they are being forwarded to local law enforcement. So Mr. Snowden, in doing what he did, exposed something that I did not even know. And I'm pretty adept at this. That the NSA, after 9/11, after all of these attacks, in the quest for safeguarding the humanity and the citizens, they're not just snooping on you. They're snooping on you and a friend and a friend of a friend and a friend of a friend, and anybody that might be a potential terrorist. So let me play this out for you. Here's how it works. Think of it this way. Let's say the government suspects you are a terrorist. and it has access to your Facebook account, which we know they do. And if you're an American citizen, there's supposed to be some boundaries, but here's what they'll do. If they think that you are interesting to them, they will not only keep track of you, they'll keep track of your friends, which is called in that world one hop. They'll keep track of your friends' friends, whether you know them or not, which is two hops. Your friends' friends' friends, whoever they may be, are a third hop. And this massive group of people go under your category and are considered fair game. And I think as I'm talking out loud, I've begun to wonder, if you're on Facebook, have you ever seen the list of people? Hey, you might possibly know these people. The majority of them I don't know. And I realize now every now and then I have clicked one or two just to see why they think I would know them. And now I may have clicked something I shouldn't have clicked, so I won't be doing that anymore. But this is how they figure out who do you know, who you're interested in, who you're talking to. Be careful on social media whose comments you like, because if that comment turns out to be aggressive, incendiary, or whatever, you're now on the list. So according to the University of Milan, back in 2007, they figured out the sense of scale is everybody on the internet is 4.74 steps away from anyone else. And the NSA and other agencies will use that to their advantage. I after saying that, it just makes me want to close this out, unplug everything, and turn the lights off. But we can't do that, can we? We got to keep going. But we know this is going on. Conspiracy theory is now conspiracy fact. So if you have a cell phone, should you worry about any of this? According to an article I read on Wired.com, yeah, you should worry a lot. If you use Verizon or Sprint or AT&T, all of which regularly turn in call metadata to the NSA, which includes call duration, phone numbers involved, and possibly location information, how the NSA uses that, is not really clear. Nothing's clear because nobody will answer the question. So here's what somebody will say to me. I'm sure maybe you've heard it. If you're one of these people that bang the drum for privacy, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. You all go back and watch Enemy of the State from 1998, see how that plays out. But let's just look at this from 2015. If you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. According to James Duane, professor at Regent Law School, and former defense attorney, this is what he said. Quote, estimates of the current size of the body of federal criminal law varies. It has been reported that the Congressional Research Service cannot even count the current number of federal crimes. These laws are scattered over 50 titles in the United States codes, encompassing 27,000 pages. Worse, the statutory code sections often incorporate by reference the provision and sanctions of administrative regulations promulgated by the various regulatory agencies under congressional authorization, which means estimates of how many regulations exist that you could unwittingly violate are nearly 10,000. Let me say that again. If you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. That there are nearly 10,000 opportunities of things that I don't even know about. There is a possibility that I could mistakenly do something that I don't even know is against the law and wind up in jail, and we see it all the time in the news. There are laws out there still on the books that we don't even know about. So if any agency of any government, but we'll just talk about our government, had access to every email you've ever written and every phone call you've ever made, it's almost certain that they could find something you've done which violates a provision in those 27,000 pages of federal statutes or 10,000 administrative regulations. You don't even know if you've got something to hide. Chew on that one for a while. Last conspiracy theory I want to present to you that I'm really getting tired of hearing about is that the whole Shemitah year, this whole thing was a conspiracy theory propagated by people who wanted to make money from it. And I'm not saying that they didn't make money from it, whether that's why they did it or not. I don't know. I don't know them personally. But what I've said before, and I'll say it again, and now the facts are starting to bear out as the stories are coming out to prepare the world for a global meltdown. Remember, the Shemitah year was based upon forgiving debt, God's forgiveness, and the rest of the land. Well, the land's been obliterated by the things we talked about before. One of the conspiracy theories that I started studying in the 90s was that the Federal Reserve was a debt machine designed to create inflation. There's a book out there called The Beast of Jekyll Island. There are DVDs, there's videos, go on YouTube, just look up the Federal Reserve. You'll be shocked at what it's really all about. But here it is. The Federal Reserve is a private, now it has nothing to do with the federal government, private banking cartel that was created by bankers and serves the interest of bankers. Wow, you see, they created something to serve themselves. That makes sense. No conspiracy there. That was right in our face. And it was designed to perpetually increase the U.S. national debt and to perpetually create inflation. Hey, good job, guys. You're doing great. And since the Federal Reserve was created back in 1913, the U.S. national debt has grown more than 5,000 times larger, and the U.S. dollar has fallen by more than 96%. Now, can you applaud such efficiency? They said what they were going to do, and they set out to do it. Unfortunately, we're on the losing end of that. According to the U.K. Telegraph, $3 trillion of corporate debt is about to be reckoned with. There's a $3 trillion corporate debt, which means emerging market companies have overborrowed by $3 trillion in the last decade, which was a quadruple of what took place from 2004 to 2014. And the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, in their Global Financial Stability Report, basically said that it was the brittle financial system was coming to the end of a period of cheap liquidity propped up by low rates. If you remember, I don't know if it was last week, the week before, I've kind of lost track. I don't think we were on last week, so it couldn't have been last week, where we talked about the whole financial thing and people in the know was saying that they probably should have raised the rates, but they didn't. What's going to happen, according to these articles I'm reading, the Bank of England, the UN, the Bank for International Settlements, have all issued similar warnings, the same with the IMF, is that there's going to be a wave of defaults that is going to rock the globe. And the only way to stop it will be raising interest rates, will essentially collapse it. And I don't understand that logic, but somehow that works in the financial world, which is probably why I've never had a lot of money. According to the Bank of England's chief economist, that the world is entering the latest episode of a three-part crisis trilogy. Well, they've made it into a movie. And there's going to be a downturn in emergency economies, and that the global financial system is primed for a crisis. Already, the German Dutch bank is on the verge of massive trouble. The bank announced a loss of more than $6 billion for the third quarter of 2015. I had a friend in the 80s who was a part of Credit Lyonnais, the massive Swiss bank, French Swiss bank company, and he used to tell me about all this stuff. And the Dutch bank was always one of the big power plays, the most secure, and they're $6 billion down. We know that China devalued their money. People lost money, some of them half of everything they had. And here's where it's all going to go down, and we're going to start closing out here. And I've said this, and this is what the Shemitah is about. This is what God's judgment on a world, but especially America, is about. I have the largest purchasers of U.S. treasuries. The people that have bought our notes to prop us up are China, Russia, Norway, Brazil, and Taiwan. Brazil is a joke money-wise right now. China is in trouble. We've made Russia more of an enemy and an adversary than they've ever been before. Well, here's what those five people have done. They've changed their mind. They're not going to buy any more treasuries. Matter of fact, they're dumping them at record rates. I'm not a financial whiz kid, but if the five countries that own all of our notes and have helped prop us up are no longer going to do that, but instead dumping them, devaluing them, and calling for a new worldwide financial standard, what do you think will happen to the United States of America? Are in financial trouble. The U.S. government bonds are selling at a fastest pace on record. Here's what's going to happen. The 12-month period that ended in July have started to hit the slides. We've been lied to. We've been misdirected. We've been told everything's going to be okay. This isn't going to happen. Hey, look over here. Don't look up. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. What do you think will happen when that goes down? Again, I'm not a financial analyst, but I do know enough to know that if banks are in trouble and they think your home is an asset, and even though you may be up to date and you may have a perfect payment record, and we've seen it happen, and they think this is a good market, you miss a payment, you're maybe a week late, 10, whatever it is, you violate your mortgage agreement, they can seize your house. They can repossess it. If somebody comes along and says, hey, I think this is a great area, I want to develop this, and I'm going to buy up all these mortgages. We are in what I believe is a very subtle, serpentine, dark time that when it goes, it's going to be like dominoes. Remember we talked about that? When a domino falls, the first batch goes slowly, the middle batch pick up speed, and the final ones just all go at once. You can't even keep your eye on them. It's a blur. So we've got what's going on in the Middle East. We had what went on in the UN last week. We have Israel being backed into a corner. And oh, by the way, did you see on the news that a month ago, or not a month ago, I talked about Israel found the largest natural gas field in the world? And that was one of the things they thought Russia might be sliding into steel. Oh, by the way, they just found the largest oil field in the world. So right now, Israel is sitting on the largest natural gas field and the largest oil field in the world. And Russia just became friends with Iran to protect Syria and Turkey and everybody's around Israel. Somebody's going to go, if I control those fields, I control the finances of the world. Whew. You know, if this were the porch, I'd be praying right now. Because everything that runs through me tells me we're in trouble. We don't have anybody in leadership that will stand up to this, and I think that was the plan by those who lurk in the background and help manipulate these things. I don't know how long it'll take for them to shut down the internet, which will take us off the air, and even if I went to shortwave, I don't know how long that would be. We really need to, as they said in Florida during the hurricanes, hunker down. Means we need to dig our heels in, bring our head down below the danger line, and figure out what we're going to do. First thing I'm going to do is pray. I'm going to make sure I'm in right relationship with the Lord. And if that's where you are and you're not here on Wednesday nights, you know, you can always listen to the downloaded versions. We've been talking about things that will help you get through those times ahead. If you want to be encouraged, every week I'm posting a five-minute, what I call a five-minute reflection for the week on my Facebook pages, but it's on the YouTube channel with the link for the Firefall Network. You have access to these websites. You can reach out to me. Here's what I want to know from you, and I won't read your names on the air. What are you doing to prepare? Are you stocking up food? I'm not trying to get, you know, we're not preppers here. He's a prepper, she's a prepper, everybody's a prepper. No, we're not doing that. What I mean is, I just want to know what you guys are doing. I sit here sometimes with Joe, sometimes by myself, and pontificate, and I'd like to know what you guys are doing. Maybe you have some great ideas. Would you like me to bring somebody on a Sunday night that is knowledgeable about this to talk about it? Knowing that something could change so fast, you wouldn't be able to get it done anyway. And I heard somebody say, and I'm sorry, I don't have the name of the person in front of me, says, if you're just preparing now, it's too late. Well, I don't believe that. I believe you can always try and do what you got to do, but the first place you better be is you better be right with the man who sits on the great white throne of judgment. And you better have a right relationship with him and be under his covering. And that man is Jesus of Nazareth, Yeshua, HaMashiach, the Messiah. Our conspiracy theory to conspiracy fact. Let me tell you another thing. Some people think it's a conspiracy theory or it's a theory, but I'm going to tell you it's a fact. That man that sits on that throne, he's coming back. But think about this, and we'll cover it later on the porch, and I'm going to make some videos. What would make the king of the universe, the God of all creation, leave his seat, leave the throne, to come down here and deal with the problem? A problem so bad only he could deal with it. Pray on that one. Hopefully Joe will be back with us next week. If not, I should be here. We'll be here. And if something goes wrong and we're not, stay prayed up, folks. I'm Richard Grund. This has been Reflections in the Dark on Firefall Talk Radio.